Hello and welcome to the Accessible AI podcast. My name is Evgeny Zaltsarevsky and I'm going to be your host tonight. So on today's episode, we have two guests from Springboard.ai, Davia Temen and Bruce Molloy. They are business strategists who are helping companies adapt within the flourishing AI landscape. Davia comes from a rich background in finance, marketing, media, and academia, and is a regular columnist at Forbes, with bylines at other prominent publications such as Bloomberg and The Wall Street Journal. Bruce is an inventor and consultant with patented technology in adaptive cognitive systems and 25 years of experience in AI and machine learning. Please welcome to the show, Davia Temen and Bruce Molloy. I'm here with Davia and Bruce from Springboard.ai. And so first, could you please introduce yourself to our audience?
So I'm Davia Temen. I run my own firm. So I run Temen & Company, which is a crisis and reputation management firm that works with corporate boards and CEOs on leadership and governance issues, as well as crisis and reputation at the top of the house. I'm also have the privilege to be an advisor to Springboard.ai, which is a new consulting firm that specializes in AI consulting, both for the top of the house and at the operational level for companies of all different sizes and all different needs. And my passion is to marry the two together and to be able to help top folks in governance and leadership understand the potential of AI.
And Bruce, I understand that you actually come from the field of AI and you have technical background and you've been in AI for more than 10 years. Is that correct?
So, Evgeny, I came to AI through studying music and physics, I think, and somehow or other that ended up creating a real passion in me about this whole area. I built a couple AI companies and recently have gotten involved with AI again because it's really taking off now. There are no more AI winners. It's progressing at this amazing pace. And along with Davia and a remarkable team, really world-class, very nimble AI experts, we've assembled this company called Springboard, Springboard.ai. And the whole idea here is to really help the top of the organizations to help management understand AI, bring AI into their organizations, start utilizing it, creating new business models, if you will, new products, and really benefit, not get left behind. What we think is a very nonlinear race.
So it's very interesting what I found that many founders and many successful people in AI and machine learning have either musical passion or art passion. And musical passion, I found, and even more often occurrence. So it happens more often. So what do you think is, and you also mentioned that it's connected somehow. So what do you think music has to do with interest in artificial intelligence and machine learning?
First of all, it's a very interesting observation on your part. And I remember when I was getting started in AI, Bell Labs and others, they were hiring some of their folks from Juilliard and other places. So there has been that connection. I think music, first of all, is something that evolves in time, and you have multiple lines, instruments, threads that are knit together. And so not just with AI, but software in general, I think this is a way to think about how it goes together and how they evolve. And there's a purpose. With music, there's a purpose to get from the beginning to the end, but usually there's some development and there's some exposition, there's some kind of satisfying ending. So these same kinds of dynamics take place with software. And it's mathematical. You know, you can describe the positions of the notes on the staves with numbers, and you can certainly define where these algorithms are in time numerically also. But I don't know. I mean, it's a very good question. There does seem to be a connection between them.
So, Davia, what brought you specifically to AI world? I mean, you are very experienced in coaching and consulting and helping leaders perform better and achieve better and have their life in harmony. But what bring you specifically to the world of AI and machine learning?
Well, beyond the fact, Yevgeny, that I come from a scientific family, and so science has always been a big part of my life. So, in leadership, you want to take a look at, to quote Wayne Gretzky, the hockey player in the U.S., you want to be where the puck is going, not where the puck is at that particular moment, which means you want to be looking into the future to see what are the game changers for your organization or your industry. And then you want to run to those game changers, figure out how they make sense for your organization, and adopt them quickly within your strategy. So AI is clearly either the new oil or the new electricity. People have called it a lot of different things, but that if you don't take a look at it and figure out the right way to think about it and adopt it, you could be left behind.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Well, that brings to a concern that many people have expressed on this podcast, and specifically, I see two opinions being generated. So on both sides, I see there's very intelligent people that are in the field. One that you express, that you can hear Peter Diamandis express in very positive terms, and you can hear Eliezer Yudkowsky express in very negative terms, in terms of like, oh my God, it's going to change it badly. But is that, you know, AI is right here. Even before general AI, we will change and transform every industry with machine learning, with other aspects of AI. It's happening right now. This is the future. Let's go there. And then there is the other aspect of people who are also into AI. They say it's extremely overvalued. The scope of implementation is now very limited. Not a lot of data can work for it, and it's more of an efficiency tool rather than a breakthrough, and it's really, really hyped up for no reason. So we had both parts argumented, but I was wondering, what is your position on it, and why you think, yes, it's not hype, it actually is changing the world, and this for sure is technology of the future, and I would love to know both Davis and Bruce's opinion on this. So,
well, as one looks for game changers in industry, clearly technology is moving so quickly that that's where the future lies. In article that Bruce and I wrote for Forbes, I have a column called Reputation Matters, and this column is called Forget the Hype, What Every Business Leader Needs to Know About Artificial Intelligence Now. We've got a timeline in there, and you can see that whereas AI has been around for 40 or 50, 60 years, really, the progression has been compressed as we are going further out. So it's moving very, very quickly because of a convergence of cheap computing, cloud storage, a number of different things. This is clearly an innovation whose time has come.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very interesting point. Bruce, what do you think, especially when it comes to people maybe, you know, coming in with data and saying, hey, we've got data, do some machine learning magic on it. And turns out that's either overfitted or it's not well structured. And can you comment on that? Agree?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. I'd love to. And a couple things in terms of the, if I could, in terms of the hype or the acceleration of where we're going. I mean, it's here and now. It's very real in almost every device. the technology product that we use, there's some form of AI, even very simple ways. And in an aggregating way, this is picking up and really affecting more of our products and in interactions. In terms of the, in terms of just having the data, is there something here? Is there something that can be done? Yes, there is noisy data. There's data that might not have the signal, which would be helpful. But at the same time, there are more and more algorithms being developed that require, in some cases, less data. You know, you have things like GANs, and you have Jeffrey Hinton's capital networks, and really these new these new kinds of algorithms and technologies that make it possible to pull more information from the data. And also in that, you know, in your question, Evgeny, is this, there's a premise and a good premise. A lot of, you know, it makes complete sense. But, you know, if you have all the data, you know, then you can build some great AI. But in fact, there's other kinds of AI that might use reinforcement learning or other means of sort of collecting up information as you go. And so you don't necessarily need all of that, you know, data to make these things work. I think there's another aspect too. There's such a broad spectrum of what AI is, going to simple statistical means and you know, linear regression, if you will, you know, all the way up to these sort of ensemble learning systems where you have one AI feeding into another AI. And really using any number of techniques to get to a particular goal. And in that process, you might have a meta AI that will take the outputs from, you know, a series of lesser, more narrowly focused AIs and make sense of that, or, you know, reason about those inputs. So I think, you know, in terms of machine learning, I think that's it's common now. I there are just applications in every industry with various kinds of machine learning optimization and certainly predictive analytics, etc. But I think in the not too distant future, we're going to see not general AI, but we're going to see wider AI. We're going to see ensemble AI. We're going to see AI that's really being enabled by this explosive increase in your GPU. In the computing power, the GPUs and other kinds of processors.
This is quite fascinating, and a lot of people find themselves on the low start, very motivated. Okay, I want to get into this world, and what you are saying right now may be very motivational by them, but at the same time, a little bit intimidating.
Well, you know, it's. It's a good point. I was thinking about it a couple days ago. How fast the developments are taking place. And just a quick aside to about the rate of growth, how quickly things are developing. And to an extent, this is what we say at Springboard, that people really don't realize how fast this is encroaching, how quickly this is coming up. And it's non-linear growth for a number of reasons, because of this sort of geometric expansion, various kinds of exponentiation of data and process power, et cetera, et cetera. People don't realize how quickly it's happening. However, you know, it shouldn't scare people, and it shouldn't be something where people are going to be afraid of losing their jobs or they don't know how to get into it. And we should certainly talk about that, how this will affect jobs, may affect jobs as we go forward. But in terms of getting started, so making a parallel to computer programming, when we started programming computers, we would use assembler, machine code, or lower level kinds of languages to program, to create systems. A lot of complexity, it was to create something like a browser is a tremendous amount of work. But as things have evolved and progressed, there are easier and simpler tools that allow really the layperson to, you know, create create an HTML page or a website or what have you. So it's gotten easier and easier. The same thing is happening with in AI, very much so. You know, the kind of depth that one would need to do machine learning well, to work with you talked about gradient descent and partial differential calculus and probabilities. It's good to know how these things work, but there are also tools that allow you to really do some DIY work, do it yourself. This is what Microsoft is doing. Microsoft is pushing with Azure, this ability to sit down in front of a screen and have perhaps an Excel-like interface and take rows of numbers and start experimenting, see what's there. With things like TensorFlow, there are tools and layers that are on top of some of these platforms that will learn the parameters, will learn the tunings, will kind of automate a lot of these processes in a very short period of time. You know, very short period of time, these new capabilities are emerging. We can talk for a long time about all the, I think, very simple and do-it-yourself tools that are out there, but there are any number, and it's very easy to get started. And I think, you know, machine learning, a really simple way to think about it is it's linear regression. It's trying to fit a line to some points and then going to higher dimensions and then having perhaps a non-linear kind of line or function. And it needn't be some kind of distant mathematical magic. It can certainly, it's fairly understandable. Actually, there's one other point in terms of neural nets I think is a very good way to think about coming from the biological origins or inspirations for neural nets. There is a notion in neuroscience, which is neurons that fire together, wire together. And in that way, when two things occur at the same time, then there's an association. That's how we think about things. A certain time of day, a certain entrance to the city, there's a lot of traffic. At different time of day, not so much traffic, you make an association. And so neural nets do that. They make these associations between things. And certainly they're aggregated up to very complex levels, but some of the basic functioning is really conceptually pretty simple.
So I think if I may, that for people who are looking to how they get their organizations into AI, another analogy, not quite as complex, is you have to get on the merry-go-round at some point. And the longer you take to do that, the more it's spinning, the faster it's spinning, the harder it is to get on. So at some point, organizations have to figure out maybe small applications that they may be able to use to proof of concept, to see how it works, how their leaders and the human element within their organizations can interface with the AI, so that it is something that leaders both can understand, it's grokkable for them, they can see what the impact is on their bottom line and on their processes. And then once they start to become more and more familiar with all of these things that we are talking about and the way that it can add impact, it starts to take away from some of the questions and the fear about how it can work. And I think that it is pretty clear that it is always going to need, certainly for now, the interface between human intelligence and artificial intelligence. Because one of the things is artificial intelligence simply creating itself and then creating itself in successive generations. That is one of the things that causes people to feel as if it can get out of control. And there are, in fact, real ways where it can be in control.
So could you give an example of such ways?
I think about some clients that we have worked with where they have discrete uses with these large companies for an internal need. Let's say it is a booking car rentals or for a vast number of people, or it is finding out how you are going to do your acquisitions, your vendor work. There are ways that they can put in AIs. And Bruce, I think you're going to probably have to help me out on this one.
Well, so in terms of being able to monitor the AI, to put limits in the AI, there's a lot of work going on right now in terms of explainability. So kind of knowing how the AI got to its answer, its solution, what its thinking is. And so with these techniques, it isn't now black box, and it isn't out of control. You can come to understand how, in fact, the AI arrived at its decision. And with that, you can monitor the outputs. You can put in various kinds of rules or various kinds of filters to make sure that the AI doesn't really run amok. There are examples in conversational AI where you're probably familiar with some of these examples of the Microsoft Tay and others, where they were allowed to just sort of learn from their environment, and they kept adding to it. You're familiar with that example?
Yeah. Expand it for our audience in case if somebody didn't know about it.
Sure. So there was a bot that Microsoft had put in place, and it was learning from the environment. It was learning from the Twitterverse, language phrases, how to respond, and they had it go out and kind of learn on its own. And within a very short period of time, I think it was 24 hours or so, it came back and it was, spouting obscenities and racist, and they had shut down and it simply learned what was out there. And this has happened actually for a number of organizations. And so it was out of control. It was out of control. But how do you deal with that? How do you limit that? And so what can be done? And actually, one of the members of Springboard was one of the original Watson Jeopardy team. And, he talks about having a sort of filter on the way out. So the system can learn responses, learn language, et cetera. But you have a sort of check. You have rules. You have certain phrases that can be used and, certain ways to respond. And so really to take a page out of what we do as humans, so sort of etiquette and what you do and you don't do, you could put a layer like this on top of the AI. And this gets back to the earlier point about sort of ensembles or these kind of groups of AIs working together. And there's one kind of ensemble. This is kind of interesting. I'm hearing more and more about this. I don't know if it's an ensemble, but really sort of, in terms of these, right now, a lot of AI is about this deep learning or machine learning. But that's really just part of it. That's just a portion of what is or will be making up AI. And AI had a lot of success initially with expert systems, rules, logic trees, if you will. Later, we had the neural nets on top of it. I think what we come back to following this is really a combination. The third layer will be logic, symbolic kinds of processing, coupled with various of these nodes, these learning nodes, and put together properly, we'll be able to achieve wider AI. It won't be general AI, but certainly we'll be able to do more than it's being done with some of these very narrow kinds of applications.
Let me just actually add too. So you've got some companies, what Bruce was talking about before were the chat bots and different ways that organizations can use these. So perhaps one organization would have tried with a TAE kind of situation to work with its external customers around, I don't know, purchasing, for example. But that may have had some problems. So instead, what they would then do is find other applications that would work internally, that would be able to make other processes way more efficient, and use the cognitive processing to make internal work more efficient. Then they'd learn the lessons that they had to learn with the etiquette, with the layers of rules over that they might not have thought about before, but that would actually inform how the AI interfaced with human beings. And then they could take those lessons back to what they had initially tried to do before with not as much success. And they would be able to learn much more successfully. So if you start with some kind of a narrow sliced project and you begin to learn about all the lessons you need to know about that, you've now gotten on the merry-go-round, and then you can start to scale that to other more profitable uses.
It's very interesting because I actually was in a situation when I experienced this similar problem to what this Twitterbot experienced. So I went through an exercise. It was very interesting. Just took a Reddit dump, which, dump from Reddit, which is basically all stuff which is on Reddit for a year. And then we sorted it into SQL based on the ranking. So let's say, and made a sequence to sequence based neural network, which essentially would just say, give a question and answer as if you were translating English to French. And but it was Reddit. So you would ask it different things, and it would answer sometimes, as you mentioned, with obscenities. You could get racism. You could get everything. It was pretty scary initially. But when we just added one parameter, which was how many likes does this post have? So they don't have exactly like the likes. They have like something like quality score or ranking.
Right.
At 10, suddenly it started speaking like a human being. So sometimes systems can filter themselves if there is like some crowdsourcing is involved in terms of how they are, you know, how they're measured.
Well, as with any human system, you have to have an edit function. You have to have a sensor function. You know, it's our superego gives that to us as human beings. And really what you're talking about is with AI, figuring out the right superego to impose upon unruly AI. And when you marry those two things together, you've got something quite powerful.
But what you were saying, Bruce, is fascinating, because what you were saying essentially is that just trying to focus on one type of artificial intelligence, let's say just deep learning, really limited. Yeah. So what I'm looking at right now in chatbots, it's all rule-based and it's extremely limiting. And let's say in image recognition, it's all deep learning and it's very limited.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very interesting. And building upon what Davia said and you know, your comment about the sort of quality of the postings in Reddit, there's a kind of dialogue, a kind of dialectic that can go on between these different modules. There's something called, it's a funny name, GANs, Generative Adversarial Networks. Are you familiar with those? Again, I don't know if that rings a bell, but I don't want to get geeky.
Let's go geeky. Let's do it.
Let's go geeky. So the whole idea was this guy, Ian Goodfellow, fairly recently, who had come up with the idea of these GANs. And the idea is to have two networks that sort of, you know, pairing with one another. So they had some examples where one network would try to create, here's what a human face looks like. And then the other network would be a critic and say, well, no. You have to put the nose below the eyes or whatever it was. But in this fashion, going back and forth, try something, you know, generate something and be adversarial. They ended up with these pictures of faces that look very real. And if you think about that approach, you have these two different AIs talking back and forth for a particular purpose. If you extend that, one could imagine having perhaps that editing, you know, that etiquette AI or the you know, the controlling the super ego or whatever it is that's sort of controlling what's there and having a kind of dialogue and having the system, you know, having the system learn from those interactions. And so that's why, you know, there's so much emphasis now on and successful. You know, frankly, you can be very successful with with machine learning, and then you get to deep learning, which, you know, a lot more is going on. But there are so many other kinds of you know, networks and learnings and frankly techniques that can be used. And I think you're going to see you use the word entrepreneur. And I think at the top of the discussion, you're going to see, I think, a lot of innovation, AI entrepreneurs putting these things together in new ways. And you know, being able to, it's hard to know what the future will hold. But I mean, a lot of those lines, there's some very interesting work going on with these self-improving algorithms. And I think you might have heard of these, but these are algorithms that, you know, using reinforcement learning or other means are able to self-improve without programming. And that happened with the AlphaGo program that Google had. They created sort of a next generation that was able to self-improve by, you know, watching the first version, and it did, you know, very rapidly. In terms of these self-improving algorithms, I saw some work recently having to do with studies in economics, looking at various kinds of equations and growth and production and efficiency. These were, you know, some works that talked about hyper super growth as a result of self-improving algorithms within the economy. And, you know, it's hard to know where this will go, but, you know, clearly there's much more than supervised learning with some kind of a regression.
So, Bruce, I have a question for you. What does improving mean? Because you can imagine a world where AI could think it's improving, but we might not. Or there might be some, differing views about what improvement means.
Right. And that's a perfect question. Yeah, that's a perfect question, because we've all heard all the scenarios, the utopian to dystopian, as to where we go, where AI will take us. And I think a simple way to think about a successful AI future is that in which the objective function of the AI, the goal of the AI, is completely aligned with humans, completely aligned with what we want.
Yeah.
And it gets out of control where it, you know, it has some other function to maximize something, you know. I mean, you can imagine, you know, some funny scenarios where the AI just wants to create more and more and more of this particular product. You know, regardless of what people want, you know, get kind of out of sync with the marketplace. But it's really that I think synergy of the human objectives with the AI objectives that would cause these self-improving algorithms to create a better future.
So what I know about our audience is that part of it is entrepreneurs. Part of it are just people who are non-tech, but they're very interested in machine learning and deep learning, and yes, AI. And because I heard about deep learning and machine learning, because now they're overly hyped, as you say, some other aspects of AI are underlooked. People are underinformed about them. But what? So I know that entrepreneurs already got their ideas from just our conversation, because I know how they operate. I know a startup founder lights up with an idea and just asks, well, how do I improve that? But what about just people in non-tech, the question is learning how to do all those things, learning how to use the technology, the only way to contribute? And if it's not, what are other ways that you can contribute other than learning how specific algorithms work, and, you know, going with linear regressions and understanding the jargon? I mean, what are the ways to contribute to AI? How to participate in that?
Well, if I could start, and then I think go quickly into Bruce. you know, most people these days who are not experts, they've gotten their idea of what AI is from science fiction or from television or from the media in some way. And they probably have not very close a relationship, or at least they think they don't have a close relationship with what AI can do and what it is, right? So therefore, it can spiral out of control because they've got a lot of dystopian science fiction movies that are out there now and have been for a while, and then they think they know it when they really don't. When instead, it is really the suggestions that Amazon is giving you after you've just bought one bottle of vitamins and they tell you what other people are taking, what other vitamins people who take what you bought are liking to take too. So as consumers, we certainly are having an experience of AI, but we may not label it as such. So beginning to get your mind around all the places where it already is touching us in our universe starts to make it more understandable.
Well, that could be a first step, but for somebody in a profession. So I'll give you an example. It's a real example. So my hobby is music, just like as with Bruce. And I mix my own tracks when I compose music, but I never master them. So mastering is when the track gets edited, finalized. So when the track is the mix, it gets finalized. And I used to send it to a person. And the person would do this. But there is this service called Lander that just uses some recurring neural network that just pretty much does it for me. It takes only $9. They're not sponsoring this show. Essentially, I'm giving them free advertising because they're doing it better than the guy that I send it to. So mastering professionals are going to be out of work really, really soon. I mean, what specifically can I do in my profession if I am a mastering guy? What specifically can I do in my profession if my goal is actually to look at images and make decisions? Let's say I'm a radiologist. I mean, how can I contribute other than learning how neural networks work, or how, you know, machine learning works, or how artificial intelligence works in general?
You know, certainly those repetitive tasks, and there are all kinds of them that really lend themselves to learning. And a lot of these tasks are things people don't necessarily want to do. The two you mentioned, the mastering, the radiology, you know, this requires really more expertise, you know, a better sense as to how this goes together. And I think for those radiologists, certainly for the people doing the mastering, there still is a human, you know, there still is the human component, the human interface. With mastering, perhaps there are different qualities, there are different tastes. You know, the output is, you know, there's some subjectivity. And to the extent they could use some of the tools to do perhaps the lower level adjustments, you know, grunt work, if you will, but still use their own judgment to determine different kinds of outputs or sounds or qualities. They might look to the AI as an amplifier of what they're doing. And I think, you know, in general, you know, AI will, they will take a lot of these, you know, they'll take a lot of these kinds of jobs. However, I think if we had a crystal ball and could see the future, there'll be a whole series of new requirements, new jobs that will open up, that will be needed, that will be created, frankly, by the AI. And if you look at history,
With the automobile revolution, when it began, new jobs were created, things you expect, auto mechanics positions. But other kinds of industries arose. The advertising industry, creating billboards, came to life simply because people needed bigger signs in order to read them from the moving car. Consumer credit came into being as a result of the need to purchase these large, expensive cars. So in a similar fashion, as AI starts to move forward, there'll be a whole new crop of jobs, I believe, that will come to the fore. And we're hearing it already. I mean, with if you imagine these sort of ensemble systems, systems that are dialectical, systems that can self-improve. I've heard people talking about psychologists. Psychologists for the AI, and you might scratch your head and say, "What?" But if the AI is being taught, is learning from associations, you know, perhaps there was some kind of rogue association, you know, in its past, and some kind of tune-up will be needed in order to make the AI function, more effectively. And so who knows? I mean, I think there will be kind of teaching jobs, managerial jobs, a whole series of new skills will be needed as the AI come online.
So that is optimistic. And at the same time, there is one thing that really stands out is my profession, whether I'm psychologist, radiologist, doesn't matter, it will transform with AI. And that doesn't mean that I need to go through Andrew Ng's course right now or Fast AI and suddenly become Python master, using TensorFlow. But that means that I should really study AI and understand the principles. Am I on the right track here?
That's terrific. No, I think that's absolutely right. And I was thinking that when you were talking earlier, which is understand the principles. Also, just look at the successful case studies. Look at how it's being applied. Infer from other industries. Kind of map over to what you're doing and say, gee, could we do something like this for psychology or teaching, or baking or sports or what have you? And that's exactly right. I don't think that the next generation of AI entrepreneurs, at least a class of them, will have to learn the Andrian courses or learn probability or differential calculus or matrix multiplication. That's sort of the nuts and bolts. Those are the spark plugs that kind of make this thing move. But they should be thinking, I think, on a larger level and more an easier to access level.
So what resources would you recommend in order to do this? So in order to access this information. So let's say if I am trying to go to AI and try to learn what's going on, I really want to study it. I get two types of information. Overly technical, so I immediately get, TensorFlow. Python, gradient descent, or very generic. AI is going to take over the world. Look how it is. But most people, they don't work on very zoom out level. They're not investors. At the same time, they're not programmers. They're not applied mathematicians. They're not data scientists. So where is that data? Where is the information that we really need to look at?
So the internet and different companies are awash with various use cases where they make the case for the different ways that AI can be applicable and has been applicable in organizations. We've got a bunch of them on the springboard.ai website. There are many and a lot of the very biggest of consulting firms. And one way that you can really start to understand what the applicability is to do a deep dive into all of those use cases. And somewhere among them, you're probably going to find things that are resonant with what your need is or what you think your need may be.
Interesting. And once you realize that it's time to speak to people who actually are in the trenches and who either have done it themselves or helped others even better get to similar results. So for them to reach out to you, or what would you suggest as the next step after, hey, I found a few case studies in very similar industries or different industries, but similar in principle. What is my next step?
Call us.
Okay. Could you tell us more? So after they call you, what kind of information will they get? What will happen then?
There might be, two or three different things that they want to do. But what we would do in general is really understand if it's a business need or a product, or really understand what it is they want to do. Because they've come to us understanding something about the art of the possible and something about how this might be applied. With that, we could move in a few different directions. One would be to do an agile AI sprint to actually kind of realize some of their ideas, to, you know, see what can be done with a prototype, a proof of concept, if they have something they want to build. It could be that they have an interest in getting a certain part of their organization up to speed to get the AI really into the kind of fabric of the organization, which could be a series of workshops, interactive sessions. It could also be a kind of research vendor selection, sort of general management project in which there might be two or three different vendors that we would put together and we would make a recommendation, put that strategy together for them so they could proceed. Really the idea is that to help, it's moving quickly. There's a lot that isn't known. And our role is as both a kind of coach and facilitator to help them achieve what they like to do with AI.
David, would you like to add to that as well?
Well, I think it's very interesting that we're talking about AI psychologists. Sometimes I think that the world starts and ends with Isaac Asimov. And of course, he talked about a robot psychologist in the 1950s, Susan Calvin. I think it's interesting to figure that out. I think that what most people who are trying to find solutions that will be applicable right now in their businesses to understand this more, they need translators. So they need people who understand all of the capabilities that AI currently has and will have within the next 5-10 years. And then they need people who speak their languages to be able to do that translation into the art of the possible, what is possible. So we start with their need, whatever that need might be. And because, you know, AI expertise, as you all know, is getting very hard to find. The top 8 companies are buying all the people up. They're buying them up right after they get their PhD. Or they're buying up companies just to get the talent. So in the network that we have, there is incredible, mature, very experienced talent that don't have to come work for you full time, but you can get anywhere from 1 or 2 hours of their time to sort of more participation on a project. So you can get the best of the best expertise totally focused to what your project is or your possibility is. And that is our value proposition.
Amazing. Sounds amazing. So somebody who had found his idea and they want to validate this idea, take next steps, get connected to a powerful network of people, get education on that, they probably should reach out to you. And that would be a very wise step once you have the idea and you establish and you have the commitment that you're going to pursue it as creating a new company or in your profession. Is that correct?
Yes.
Awesome. So is there anything else that you would want to ask our audience? You know, so maybe there is some ask our audience that you have, or some recommendation or some final parting words. We'll start with you, Bruce, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the entrepreneurs in your audience and not necessarily tech entrepreneurs, but somebody who has, you know, an idea for a website or some kind of new wearable or what have you. It's not just at AI per se. I think about entrepreneurs as being at the intersection of the art of the possible and sort of the market need and what's out there. And when you put those two together, you come up with the products that they're offering and really what's needed. And so I would say to the entrepreneurs that it isn't difficult to get started, even if you're not the technologist that some of the great machine learning PhDs are. Even if you're not that technologist, you can see what the market need is, and you can look to the art of the possible and see where the intersection is. And so I would spend that time looking, you know, understanding what the art of the possible might be and creatively thinking about how that intersects with the market need.
David, what would be your parting words and maybe ask for our audience?
we are on the early middle steps of an amazing journey. And I think it's up to each of us to make sure that ethical intelligence infuses not only artificial intelligence, but also human intelligence. These three things in the utopian world that I believe in can work together hand in hand to feed people who are hungry, to really raise the level of capitalism and market economy and humanity. And I think it's up to each of us to be able to figure out how human, ethical, and artificial intelligences work together.
Thank you so much. And again, if you're ready to contact David and Bruce, please go to springboard.ai and use the contact form. Also, you can find the link in our show notes. Thank you for listening to the Accessible AI podcast. Please make sure that you subscribe to us on iTunes or any platform of your choice and leave us a review. The sponsor of today's talk is First Level. If you have a solution with data that needs to be validated or categorized by AI and humans, check out firstlevel.io. They have humans at scale and their API is very easy to integrate. It's firstlevel.io.